Personal integrity is one's own ability to keep a promise to oneself, where you align your actions, your thoughts with your dreams. And if you're taking those actions, managing those thoughts, and being true to that, you have personal integrity. And if you don't, you don't. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I created this concept so that you can relate to yourself as someone who lives for your own dreams. And all your actions and all your thoughts are something to master in order to have that happen in your life, whatever those dreams are.
Welcome to the Role Models Podcast. My name is David. I'm really glad that you're joining me today. Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast, where I interview successful and inspiring women about their personal journeys, their careers, and the lessons they've learned along the way. Perhaps you've experienced this too. At least I have. These moments of doubt when I'm not quite sure what to do or where to go. It's in moments like these that we can often seek and receive advice or guidance from something we call life coaches. And my guest in this episode has spent over 20 years doing exactly that, helping celebrities, business executives, and people like you and me break through the challenging life and career barriers. Her name is Lauren Handel Zander. She's the co-founder of the Handel Group, which is a coaching and consulting firm based out of New York City. She has created a coaching methodology called the Handel Method, and she's also written a book called Maybe It's You, which is a practical guide that helps people put their goals into action. This is a wide-ranging and unfiltered conversation. We talk about Lauren's journey of finding her own calling as a life coach and how she has turned her experience into a company and into a book. We cover a lot of exciting topics, like, for example, how to find your calling, how to learn how and when to seek help, how to manage transitions, or how to make yourself accountable. We learn about something that she calls the head, the heart, and the hoo-ha, and how to face our fears, and in particular, the fear of failure. This is a conversation filled with nuggets of wisdom and practical takeaways on how you can take your life and put it into action. So shout out to our patron for this episode, Anna Carolina. She's a coach based out of Berlin, and her contribution makes the creation of this podcast possible. If you want to become a patron yourself and contribute to the making of this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/role models. In the meantime, you can learn more about Anna Carolina and her work on truthcircles.com. This is the Role Models Podcast. My name is David. Thanks for listening. This is episode 25, and here's my guest, Coach Lauren Handel Zander.
Lauren, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Lauren, you are a coach, you're a university lecturer, you're a public speaker, you're author of a book, and you're the co-founder and chairwoman of the Handel Group, which is named after you, and it's a corporate consulting and private coaching company. That's a lot of stuff. So my first question would be leading into this interview is, at this stage of your life and career, are you where you wanted to be?
Oh, that's a good question. The fun, even though you won't think it's a fun answer, is no. Absolutely not where I wanted to be. I want way more than I currently have, given how much I want to change in the world. But I'm also very happy, and I'm no dummy about how much I've accomplished. So I live in like two parallel lanes, never what? Satisfied and completely satisfied.
If you would look at the different focus areas that you have, if I may call them that, what is the one thing that gives you the most joy right now, and what is the one thing that keeps you awake at night, or maybe gives you a little bit less joy?
So the more successful I've gotten, the higher up I get to coach, right? So I get to coach the CEO of this or that, right? Or the famous musician that everybody knows of, right? So the holding the dreams or getting people to do the work I make everybody do of the tippity top 1% who actually have the power to change the world, that I am influencing those people makes me so happy and high that I'm fulfilling on my dream, which is reaching the people that can do the right work to change the world. So that blows my mind and makes me happy. The part that is disturbing and upsetting is I don't wonder if I can change one person radically to change who they are and what's possible for humans in one individual, but wanting to reach millions of people so it becomes possible, like common knowledge, I am failing miserably at in regards to the impact I want to have, and that keeps me up.
So there's a few of interesting things that I want to dive into of the things you said. So you mentioned that the more successful you get, how do you define success for yourself at this stage of your life right now?
So I have, you know, the when I started Handel Group with my sister, she asked me, like, what's your dream, right? And I was on a Stairmaster, and she was miserable, and I had helped her a lot and got her to New York because we were going to raise our kids together, and we were so happy to be together. But she came for a business partnership that within 3 months, she was hating it. And then she was like, you're an independent contractor. You're profound. You're brilliant. Why aren't you doing something bigger? What the hell's wrong with you, Lauren? And in that moment on the Stairmaster, I said everything I ever wanted, right? I would change education. I would break into corporations. I would impact marriage and making babies. And I would change the world if I wasn't such a, you know, wimp about figuring out how. Right. And so she's like, let's do it already. Right. So in this moment of what I wish I was possible, which was 12 years ago now or whatever. Right. I jumped off a cliff of a dream that dream told me where I would be when I died. Right. So I knew what had to happen. I wanted to be in 150 universities. I have a list that I'm in the middle of failing at that is available for me at my final blink. And so when you ask me how I'm doing, I don't have to go very far. I know what I called out back in the original inception. And does that answer that answers it, right?
Yeah. And when you say that you're failing at it, how do you manage that failure? How do you manage through this? How do you balance the ambition of reaching those 150 universities or getting even higher in the top 1% of the people that you coach or writing a next book or whatever your own goals are? How do you balance this this ambition with what you just said, like the thought that you're failing at those lists?
Well, first of all, I have a very different relationship to failure than most people.
What does most people have as a relationship?
Failure is a sad, pathetic. It's like I only have you either won or you failed, right? There's only two options, right? There's only two, and so I fail most of the time, and I think you can't win unless you fail most of the time. So I am not offended by failure. Saying I'm failing is just telling the truth that gets me up again to do better. Right? Like it doesn't hurt my feelings that I'm failing because I either failed or I won. And the only way to win is to go for it. And so it lives in that kind of understanding. I like failing.
And you're now at a point where you went on a path to reach the 1% of the world, you know, the musicians everybody knows, CEOs of some of the largest companies in the world or in the United States, celebrities that everybody knows, etc. Like, what is a path to get there? What was your path to get there?
Being an exceptional coach. There really is, you know, if you looked at my roster for the day, right, and no one knows who else is on my roster for the day, right, but you know, if they could see who they were all equal to, like I don't have, if I was coaching a 25-year-old who I was doing a favor for because, you know, I know her mother from high school, right? I don't have that rocking that person is different than rocking Hugh Jackman, right? I am measured, like I get paid the same amount an hour, right? So it does, my greatness is purely to rock an individual versus that I care more about rocking a famous individual than. So I have always given the same amount of love and devotion to the equality of every individual. And that makes me high because I much prefer believing in that. Does that make sense? Right. So there are no differences. And there isn't a person I haven't rocked from the first time I ever got to coach them. That doesn't mean they want to coach with me.
at what point of people's lives or career do they seek your coaching?
You know, so the simple answer is big transitions. Right. Or I've had enough of the same bad pattern and I'm smarter than this pattern. Like I shouldn't be failing it. Like I'm on my third marriage. Right. My kid's not talking to me. I have started 4 businesses and I'm never happy with what happens with the executive team. Right. So like someone's understands they are lacking in insight, that they better get someone smarter than them to help them have that insight.
What is your background? Like for listeners who are less familiar, where are you from and who's Lauren Hand-Alexander?
Let's see. So I am a funny little barely 5'4", New York Jew. I think he can hear it, right? I can't rub that off on me. So that's all true. I was an environmental studies major, right? Graduated in 91 or 92 from George Washington University. And really, my joke that I make is I was save the trees, kill the people. The people who didn't see the trees were my problem. And then I figured out the trees are fine unless people can see them. My problem was the people who can't see trees, not hate the people who aren't seeing the trees. That would make me miserable. So then I kind of sorted that out in my mid-20s and then went into help the people. And that was my big transition from being an environmentalist to being a humanist.
How did you manage that transition in your early 20s?
Oh, I wasn't making any money anyway. Just like a healthy early 20s shouldn't, right? So it didn't. It was more just devastating that I was wrong and embarrassed that I thought I was this environmentalist who, you know, got my first job at the United Nations and I was so proud of myself for working so hard and then like woke up and said, get me out of here. Right? It's like, you know, like breaking off an engagement, right? That is embarrassing. And the dad put the deposit down. Like it was just a mess, right? But once I figured out I could tell the truth, then I could defect.
What was the truth?
I hated the work. Like I loved the concept of helping the environment and the EPA, and like I loved the concept, but that had nothing to do with the experience of doing it day in and day out, and that was really dumb. Like you better love what you do. Versus, no, it's right what you're doing.
How much of that is, this is your early 20s, so early in your career, and you know, many of our listeners are in that stage of their career as well. And I was curious how now looking back at that time of, you know, realizing that you hate the work, that you like the idea or the concept of working to save the environment or what advice can you share for people who on figuring out how do you know that you hate something? And what is a step to or what is a series of steps of that you could initiate or their listener could initiate that are in a situation like that to work through either resolving that hate or dealing with that hate or making a change, making a transition?
Well, I would admit what you hate fast and furious and don't stay there. And then I would truly understand or get you to go, you know, shake your head, this is true. There really is what you love. There really is what people love. Like, you know, my husband is a woodworker, high, really beautiful level carpentry, right? The man's 50, right? Do you think he needs to read another, you know, woodworking magazine again? Right? It's like reading Shape magazine for the rest of your life, right? Like, really? Is there anything new in there? Maybe, but not really, right? But if you love reading about exercise and people's bodies and transformation, you'll always love reading Shape or whatever that magazine is. My husband's in love with woodworking, with wood, with tools, with all of it. Like, till 2 a.m, he's laying there reading his magazine. That's love. People are weird about figuring out what they love and turning that into a business, right? It's like, if I love it, it must be too easy. It must be too simple. I shouldn't be able, like, if you love music, if you love sports, if you love, you know, anything, trees, if you act like, there are people who really belong being environmentalists, love a good fight. Right. So when I coach people to help them figure out their dream in their career, especially in their 20s, it's so sitting in. If you read the book and do the homework, I swear to God, all you have to do is read your own homework back and you will find out that what you love has been yelling at you and talking to you your whole life. Just like my devotion to people's life stories. You know, when I was 16 years old, I helped the first person find his adopted parent, right? And I make people have conversations with their parents about sex. And if they are scared that there's some lie that they know is going on with their brother, like, I was doing this when I was 12, right? And I just never got what I was into when I was 12 was what I loved and was meant to do. Most people don't get that.
So you grew up in New York?
Long Island.
can you put us in that place? Put us in the place where you grew up, the house, the neighborhood, the surroundings. What was that like?
You did not need to lock your door, but you did, because there was nice stuff inside. It was terribly Jewish. But not my next door neighbor to my right. They were from Yugoslavia. So it was like a walking distance to Jewish temples and then very upper middle class. And, you know, there was, you know, clubs with golf. Like, it just was, you know, people who had made it and the nouveau riche. And then there really was areas that were even crazy wealthy New Yorkers, you know, who were in the music industry and blah, you know, like high end. And then don't forget, you know, the people who were running drugs and, you know, it was good and bad and it was all over the place. Right?
How did this neighborhood and the way you grew up influence your passion that you developed for people and for helping people and for, you know, at the age of 16, helping friends find their parents? Like, what was the nucleus, you would say, from early in your life as a young woman in that neighborhood?
It's interesting because I think I am very different than my family, right? My family, you know, really have secrets. They really keep their secrets. Yeah, I told them all, but they really weren't involved in each other's personal lives. And they really like kept up appearances, right? And really had the outer world and the inner world were separate, right? So I grew up a renegade against that. And then if you look at my current life, if you look at where I live, right, you can hear from my childhood that I grew up knowing all my neighbors, and I really grew up in suburbia, even though it was like fake on the outside, right? I live on 11 acres. I have chickens. I wouldn't be able to tell you one of my neighbors' names, and I've been here for 11 years, right? So I literally end up, you know, the opposite of how I grew up. It's kind of interesting. Huh?
If we asked a childhood you, what job you wanted to do at the time, what would you say?
The childhood me, what job? You know, I even do know my answer, though it is so goofy.
Go ahead.
I wanted to be, it's so ready. It's so funny. I wanted to be a hairdresser and a makeup artist.
Why?
Because I'm good at it. Right. It turns out, like, for many years now, I am a painter. Like, I paint, right? And I am an artist, and I paint a lot, right? I never got to be an artist, that kind of an artist, though I am quite an artist with a human's life, like, help them design and create and make their lives into dreams. But that's really kind of what I never got to do. I do my kids' hair and makeup.
I see a connection, though, with I think that, you know, makeup artist and a hairdresser is a people's person's profession, right? So I think you're constantly surrounded by people, listening, advising,
yes.
connecting yes. dots. So there's some parallels there.
Yes. And if you really looked at my, like, what was my favorite toys in life, like my childhood toys, I had a case of Barbie dolls, and I wasn't like trying to groom them as much as I was making them like into a soap opera, right? I was doing human dynamics and talking for everybody and puppeting an embarrassing amount.
Like a screenplay for Barbies.
And my daughter loves Barbies. Like, one of my three kids is like a Barbie fanatic. And if you listen to her, like when you tiptoe past her room at night, you can hear her, you know, working up a storm with what they're saying to each other. Like, she's a therapist too.
Was there something in the time where you grew up in Long Island, was there something or someone who influenced you most? When you think about where you're at today?
There was, ready? You're making this, I'm just going to sound so funny. Yes, there was, so there's a man who's a hairdresser, aren't I goofy, who owned Pierre Michel. He was Michel in Pierre Michel in Manhattan, which is a very high-end, sexy place to get your hair done. And our families had a relationship, so I got like a half price haircut, and I got to go into Manhattan when I was 12 and 13, which was so cool. But he studied Kabbalah, authentically studied Kabbalah, and was like really into mysticism, and we used to go deep.
And what is Kabbalah?
Kabbalah is Jewish mysticism, right? So like Sufis have their mysticism, all religions have their mysticism, right? And Judaism has its mysticism. And what happens in the mysticism is it's not about the religion, right? It's not about the laws. It's not about how to conduct your life. It's about the spiritual implications of the difference between hot and cold. Right. It's like, oh, right. It goes into mind blowing creation, like the first sound, like where'd sound come from? So it's way trippier to think about that than it is to get lost in, you know, milk and meat can't be together.
And the hairdresser, what's the.
Misha, I still love him. I still know him. He's still one of my most favorite spiritual teachers.
And what is something he did at the time that left a mark on you?
He listened to me.
How do you become a good listener?
You get everyone's equal, even if you're you know, I may be better at you than coaching, but you are better than me. Like we are equal beings. There really is one-to-one, no matter what the circumstances are, like, right? And he listened to me one-to-one, no matter that I was 12 or 13 at the time. And it was that difference of listening or caring about what someone has to say or their experience would change the world, right? We don't listen to each other. We don't get each other. We don't care. Right, we're even worse. I even think what I think is more important than what you think. Right, there's superiority complexes. Right, it's sick. So he gave me that at a very early age, and I then give it to everybody else.
The journey of becoming a coach, which is at a point you make a decision to call yourself a coach, or to identify as a coach, or to introduce yourself as a coach. Mm. Was this a moment where you decided to do this, or was this a process? And can you elaborate a little bit on your journey to becoming and identifying as a coach?
Well, first of all, I'm now old enough to really get that I was there. When I am one of the founding members of life coaching, right? Who even took the name and ran with it before anybody knew what it was. I gave it life. Many people did, but I was definitely there, right? Because I was doing it in the 90s, right? And if you really date back, right? So you would find out that it wasn't around, life coaching. And so there really was the concept business consultant, and there really was a business coach. And I really was working on people's whole lives. And so it really was, I better call myself a coach. I'll be a life coach. And it was the inception of it, right? It was an invention. Like, was it a life consultant? That sounds hokier than life coach. And I really bark like a coach, right? So coach really fits for me. It fit. It just made perfect sense. And it was the closest thing I was getting to the real telling of what I was about to do to you.
How did you find out that that there was something there that you wanted to become better? So you saw it as something in between. So there's a business consultant, there's a business coach, something in between is a life coach. How did you learn about yourself that is something there that is creating some sort of value for people that you interact with?
I left a job when I was 28.
What was the job?
It was for a self-help company that I ran away from, right? I was disillusioned, very unhappy, learned an incredible amount, but my joke is I ran away screaming, right? And would even go everything I became was not that. Right? Like, thank God for them so I could figure out what I was. Right? So that's not a nice thing to say, is it? No. But they're, you know, they're whatever. Live and let live. Right? So I worked for that company for 6-7 years. And then basically didn't know what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And didn't realize that the minute I hung out my little shingle called Life Coach with no business card, no nothing, I was making such little money when I was working there full time that it was so easy to, like, literally, if I worked 5 hours a week and charged $125 an hour, I was done. I was like, that was it. That's all I needed. Right. So it was like a bad joke how easy it was to go into business myself. And then within 6 months, really, I had 40 full-time clients, which were meeting me once a week. 40! You know, my boyfriend at the time, which is now my husband, was like, what are you? Like, how did this happen? on, right? And we had no idea because I was like, you know, basically working for a nonprofit. So I went from, and then I was so much happier. So the whole thing just like exploded into the rest of my life.
So, and so from this experience, right, you leave the job at 28, which we've been 6 years, and there's a follow-up question there that fits well from that we received from member of the role models community that I want to dive into later. But so staying in a company 6 years and then you ran away screaming, realizing that, you know, at the age of 28, and then realizing that that you can help people. And then you get booked out. Like, how does this then become the Handel Group and a real company or a book or a method that
Easy. So I struck out on my own, and then for the next truly like 5 years, I developed a process, and then I wanted to see if I could teach someone else my process. Like, could I make someone into a coach? Or was I this funky little unicorn, right? Like, had my own little magic and, I had a gift. It was mine. No one else could have it. I hated that idea, actually, right? Like, I'm only as good as I could get this to happen in the world for someone else, right? Like, if this isn't a method, then what the hell is it? So I was unimpressed. And then what happened next was I basically took a very good friend of mine who was an unhappy lawyer, but could afford to pay me to train her to turn her into a life coach. And I helped her become a life coach. I helped her leave her job and open a whole business, build a whole thriving business. And then she got a radio show. And that's when I was like, oh, I better get a life, right? I better get this company. Like, wait a minute. I really have something that has legs. Like, I better build something. Because now my own words are legally coming out of somebody else's mouth, right? Like, uh-oh, right? And I'm nowhere. And that's when basically the company started to truly form because I finally understood I had a method, not just, you know, Laurenisms.
So the process you went on this journey of 5 years to develop a process that eventually led to the method that you just mentioned. Can you share a little bit like the step from so for people who are playing around with ideas about initiating or, you know, having a spark for an idea and holding back from activating that. So In if you think back at your time of being 28, you left a job, turns out you booked out as a life coach, and then you spent 5 years developing this process or this method, like what was the first steps you took to turn the process into a method?
So what happened, so imagine that so one is sit with me, I'll listen to you. I'll give you instructions. I'm really smart. I can get you to do the right things. I can hold you accountable. Don't eat that. Go on this date. Only date these people. Like, be true to yourself. Like, some basic gist of accountability where anyone understands that a coach is just making you accountable for doing the right things. And if someone's watching, you're like more likely to do the right things. If no one's watching, you're more likely to hit snooze. Okay, so that principle never went anywhere, and that's how I got hired every time. How someone kept me is I really did get them laid. I really did get them married. I really did get them more money. I really, like, oh my God, you really are helping. And then before you know it, they're telling their brother, they're telling their cousin, they're telling their corporation, right? Or I'm coaching a press. So before you knew it, what I became something very desirable. Okay. And then what was I going to do with it? Just be this one woman band, or was I going to make music? Right. So it was a natural progression of figure out what I have, make sure that what I have is something that can be reproduced. And then, do an extraordinary job at it, and then learn from it, right? And then take it on the road. So, I mean, that's not a, you know, the truth is, I'm now that I look back at myself, I am a method maker, right? Like I'm a goddamn engineer, and I engineer what's between you and the actions you need to take to get to that end game. And then I engineer in human intelligence, right? And that's a really new field. And most of the field either studies it and has ideas, but very few have ideas and are practitioners inventing it as they go. And so that's why I've been very successful.
So you mentioned something earlier, which you also talk about in the book, about this idea of a coach being a person who can hold you accountable as the coachee, and that you said that it's easier to be held accountable to somebody else. Why is it so hard? Why is it so that we haven't found a way that's easy for us to hold ourselves accountable? Why do you think that is?
Because you want the cookie? You'd rather stay in bed? Oh, we're accountable. We're just accountable to something we don't want to be accountable for, because we're accountable to instant gratification. Except your law degree doesn't come with instant gratification, right? You're becoming a doctor. You're having a great relationship. You're right, like all the things that we most want in life take a lot of time and effort. To play the piano, to like anything great takes a lot of time and effort. And then we're the rub for a human is do I do what's going to be good for me over time, or do I do what I want to do right now? Right. And we really come up short every time with that one, right? Would you rather have a cookie or a hard boiled egg? It is pathetic. We all know the right answer. Like we know the right answer and we all want the cookie. Right?
Always the cookie.
Who? I'm sorry. I didn't create the game.
Can you talk a little bit about coaching in general? So I think a lot of people, I assume that a lot of people know what or have heard of coaching or know what it is. And there's probably on a spectrum between mentoring and a friend and coaching and life coaching and business coaching and therapy. There's like, it's a broad spectrum, and it's the lines are not very clear to me. So can you talk a little bit about just the basics of coaching? What is it? What's the purpose of it? And maybe define for yourself what a life coach is.
So I help people be true to their dreams. Most people don't even have dreams. Oh, so I make you have dreams. Then I make sure your dreams are really dreamy enough. And then I'm going to hold you to your own integrity and teach you personal integrity to being true to your dreams over your vices and your fears.
What do you mean with personal integrity?
So personal integrity is literally something I own. Like I have the copyright to it. I own it in the United States, right? Which is hysterical, because everyone wants to own everything, but nobody wanted to own personal integrity. In 2006, I bought it. Anyway, so personal integrity is one's own ability to keep a promise to oneself, where you align your actions, your thoughts with your dreams. And if you're taking those actions, managing those thoughts, and being true to that, you have personal integrity. And if you don't, you don't. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I created this concept so that you can relate to yourself as someone who lives for your own dreams. And all your actions and all your thoughts are something to master in order to have that happen in your life, whatever those dreams are.
How do you decide to seek the service or the advice of a coach?
Mostly what happens is someone radically watch someone change, right? So my business is still referral business, and it comes from, I want what she's having, right? I need that. Right? Or someone recommends you know, it's all from recommendations that it works, right? So the other thing that Handel's famous for, it's not famous for being easy. It's famous for being hard, and it's famous for working. Yeah.
So if I would seek you as a coach, like what would be the process? What would it look like? So first of all, like how do I know that you're the person that I want to work with? Or how does somebody decide on who they want to work with?
So I think the method, we have a method. The method and the process of the method is something someone should vote on if that sounds right, if that sounds good, if that sounds like that would be great for you. So we have it very explicitly. I can explain it to you. Then you can vote if that's something you're into. Then in regards to picking your coach should be like a flavor you like it delivered in, right? And it's like not everybody wants a car. Oh, yes, I need a car. But what the color of the car is and the look, that's an entirely preferenced, like you should have what you want, right? Do you want it in a Midwestern female? Right? Do you want it in a man from New York? Right? Do you want it from a Southern California? Like, so there's different and different storytelling and life experiences. So all my coaches, you know, tell on them are self-deprecating. Everything they've ever been through, you can, if you want to, hear about, along with examples that we've been trained in that are true examples, right? And if you buy the book, Maybe It's You, you'll go through real life stories, including all of mine, right? Where I get good and naked for everybody so that you really never not understand the method again, right? Like, oh, it'll bite you. Okay, so that's the whole point. So when you're looking for a coach, you should go, what's the process? Like, what's the engineering process? And do I respect that? And does that sound like it will get the job done? And then the packaging of the personality. Right. And so I have people, you know, do you want this? That's why I have lots of coaches, is so you can pick a flavor.
So you mentioned a book, it's called Maybe It's You. Subtitle is Cut the Crap, Face Your Fears, Love Your Life.
Yes.
So I read the book and it's a workbook, right? It's a combination of, you mentioned it, it's a combination of life stories. And I think you have four subjects that you talk about, and then a lot of personal anecdotes as well. So it's a combination of stories, real life stories, and exercises that people have to go through, which makes me at times, they were really uncomfortable at times, because you need to start becoming really honest to yourself when you go through these exercises.
Right.
And so there's a chapter that stuck with me, and it's something that has become also a bit of a theme with guests that we have on the show. It's this idea of self-talk. I think you call it the inner dialogue, right? And
yes.
So it's a chapter that's called Change Your Mind, and in which you make the suggestion to get in charge of your own mind and the narrative in that mind, and that you're taking people on a journey to design their inner dialogue. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I feel it's something that has been a recurring theme on the podcast, and I think it would be worth to hear your perspectives on that.
Most people do not hear what they say to themselves, which should be like a showstopper, right? If I go and unless you vigilantly start to track your own thoughts or what you're saying to yourself, you have never done it. So screw you, don't pretend you did. Okay? That's part one. Part one is most people don't know it. Then part two is that not only do you not know your inner dialogue, you believe it or don't even hear it or let it like give you moods. Like you think you're, oh, I have anxiety. I have depression. I am scared of something. Like, I don't know what's going on in there. Like as if that's not the voice in your own head, right? So there's a way you like speak about yourself or think about why life is just kind of evading you, or how come you're like this. And there's this like third person relationship to your own inner dialogue that must be stopped. right? Because you got it from your parents, you got it from like, oh, it came from somewhere worth identifying. But nonetheless, that little voice in your head or those voices in your head that are constantly worrying or saying this or saying that, they are for you to edit, like take over, understand, like manipulate, shut up, right? Listen to and not listen to, like taking over your own GPS. So one, that's a GPS, the voices in your head. And two, if you don't like where you are in your life or where you're going, you're driving according to the GPS. Who's in charge of the GPS? Oh, right. It's in between your own little eyeballs, right? Like, where's that voice of you? Like, what? And so higher consciousness or human consciousness is being able to understand what you're saying to yourself and do something about it. I don't even know how anyone gets away with not thinking that that is critical. Okay, then there really is taking over those voices and understanding them, right? Understanding your plagues, right? Understanding what's got you by the balls. Is it food? Is it drugs? Is it sex? Is it, you know, the right? Is it, mine was always cigarettes, right? And like, what's got you by the balls, right? And are you okay with that? Or what's it robbing from you? And what do you wish your inner dialogue did for a living? The minute you understand what it has been doing for a living, you can ask, what do you want it to do for a living? And that's where my book and the whole, you know, kind of one of the critical parts of the method breaks you into your inner dialogue so you can take it over. Yeah, and not be and have a sense of humor.
Yeah, I found it very there's a really great, in that chapter particularly, there's a really good step-by-step process to turn what you just described into immediate action. So I can recommend the book if you're listening to this and you're looking for something that is more of a practical handbook, it's definitely recommended. Lauren, you're the first coach we have on a podcast, so I think what I really wanted to do is to reach out to our listeners, to the Role Models community, and see and hear a little bit, seed out what kind of topics or issues they are currently working through. And I received a long list of questions. We'll see how many we can go. But maybe we can turn this next segment in a bit of a live coaching session for our listeners, and maybe other people can recognize those themes as well. So the first question is something that I wanted to pick up on, something that you mentioned earlier that you went through, is that, you know, at the age of 28, you left the job screaming after 6 years. And I think so. I have a bunch of questions that cover a bit this area. Is realizing, recognizing that you're unhappy in your current workplace with maybe a bit of self-talk around, but there's all these reasons that I should stay. There's money. I need to stick around for another year to have it look better on my CV, or I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. I'm feeling stuck in it. And I can't really assess whether or not it's a place where I can turn things around for myself.
Right.
Or realize or accept that while I like the idea that this was a great place to work, it isn't for me. And it's time to do something about it. Well, how would you coach people through that?
Well, first of all, one of my favorite, like, it's going to come out in my next book, and we're already working on that. But I'll give away the concept in this moment because it really works. It works so well, right? So we have a head, we have a heart, and we have a hoo-ha. Right? So you got your head, your heart, and your hoo-ha. Okay. Your head has everything it thinks is important. Oh, if you leave the job now, you won't be able, like, you'll be embarrassed on your resume if you like that. Like, so there's head talk and everything the head wants for your life. And then there's what your heart wants for your life. Oh, I should love it. I should feel safe. It should be fun every day. I care, right? So your head has a language, your heart has a language, and your hoo-ha when it comes to your career is that you think you're cool. You think it's sexy. You're impressed with yourself. You like talking about it. It makes you feel proud in kind of a sexy sort of way, right? But mostly I use head, heart, and hoo-ha for love, right? And that, and then the mistake that we make is that we think that they all three are fighting for 100%. Like this one should get 33, this one should get 33, and this one should get 33, right? Instead of going, the head gets 100% of what it wants, the heart gets 100% of what it wants, and the hoo-ha gets 100% of what it wants. And they always have to negotiate with the truth. Okay. So, and then what happens is we don't fight for excellence. We always sell out for a compromise and suffer. We really do. We're not really overachieving experts and really willing to like believe that something else is possible, right? We have our PhD in fear, not our PhD in badass. Okay. And so I'm constantly helping people get their right PhD. So then what does that make sense? So that listener, right? So I really do agree that your head doesn't want to leave a job under a year. Like you had me at hello, right? Or you could go 2 years because I want to be in the advertising industry and I don't want to upset it. Like, so the head has intelligences you have to pay attention to. The heart has intelligences, and the hoo-ha basically is clapping for the right team.
So it's making sure that the one doesn't overtake the other, that they stay somehow in the 33% balance.
Yes. Well, normally there's a 2 out of 3 and the third gets killed. Right. There's like, it's dangerous. And then if you asked me who should be leading, like who gets the most delegates, even though it's 100%, 100%, 100%, but like who should lead is the heart. And then the head should be the GPS for what the heart wants, along with its own agendas. And the hoo-ha is always chemistry and clapping. But if the heart and the head get it right, chemistry is fabulous.
The hat, the heart, and the woo-ha. Thank you.
I like it in German English.
So a question I really liked as well is and it's something that I've been struggling with the last few months or so when I left SoundCloud and trying to figure out my next bigger moves is how do you find a way to ask for help when you don't know what you need?
You would ask just that question alone, right? So you start with wherever you are, right? And being in a tribe, having your best friends, having mentors, having people around you that are supporters of you, or giving them a chance to be a supporter of you and then finding out that they missed the lunch 3 times, like finding out who's not on your team and who is on your team. And asking for help, even though you don't know what you're like, oh, I came to this lunch and I really just wanted to pick your brain on what do you think is most important for me? For you know me for 4 years. So it's okay to be wherever you are. Admitting where you are, even though you wish you were somewhere else, I wish I already knew what I wanted, but you don't. So choosing to love where you are and is the only way to get through that state. To get to the next state. And you're welcome to use time and deadlines.
Time and actions.
Yeah. Time, deadlines, and actions, right? So I must make a decision before the end of the year. And if I don't have a decision by the end of the year, I can give myself till March 1st, but I have to make money. So, and then I have to get a job that pays me at least X, right? So I am a contractor. My joke is I'm a spiritual contractor. Like I'm making spiritual contracts that make you feel good about yourself and make you do all the work so that you like yourself and love yourself and respect yourself, right? So then if you're feeling a little crappy, you're probably not in a good contract. About this time and frame and situation you're in. So always be in a contract. You'll know you feel better if you are. Does that make sense?
It does. You mentioned earlier a concept that stuck with me called the PhD. We have a PhD in fears.
Yes.
What are some of the in your coaching practice, in your coaching career, what are some of the typical fears that you get confronted with in your coachees, and how do you help them coach through those fears?
So if we're talking about an incredibly successful person, right? So what happens with an incredibly successful person who rose, they usually rise from nothing. And then they rise. And they didn't even know they were going to rise, right? Like they rose, right? And it all happened. And then they get to a point where what got them there, they can't even say. And then they become incredibly defensive, like defending their territory, defending paranoia, they get so defensive. They lost what got them there, that was totally freedom fighting, like on offense, didn't care what anybody thought, right? Like so there's a big rub in very successful people losing what got them there and having to relearn freedom versus a PhD now and things to be scared that could be taken away from them. So that's a whole very popular brand of issues. Okay. Another thing that I language often is people dream, like that got very successful, are in a state of being a prince, not a king. So they don't even know they can dream of a kingdom, of everything they wish was possible, and they're still like a warrior chasing more and more and more, but they're not quite brilliant about how to build it so they're personally happy. So that's another big transition that I help people think through.
What's the fear then there from between prince and kingdom?
What got me here, I better stay doing. Mm. Right? So they never arrive. Right? It's never enough. Right? They never transition into the 4-hour work week. Not because they can't, but because they can't even conceive of it, because they've been fighting and clawing their way to the top their whole time. So they can't invent a new way to look at life. So I get brought in for that. But again, it's fear that if I change how I do things, it'll change and I'll fail. Like, so people are incredibly, like, you're kidding, you're scared of failure, right? In a way that you can't admit.
We see fears as something, or I tend to see fears as something negative. But if you would, as a person who helps people work through their fears, do you have a favorite fear to help people through?
The funniest one is funny, not funny. It's not funny. People are scared of telling the truth.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right. It like that you think it, it's like a, you know, a bad, it's like a bad, what movie was that? Where there's a mole on the person's face. Right. There's like, I don't know. It's like an Austin Powers movie, right? He can't not stare and want to say it. And so that's what's actually happening all the time with people. Like, everyone's freaked out by what they're not saying, and they know what they're not saying, and they spend their life managing the fear of what could happen if they say it. That is ridiculous, because as you think you're original and doing it to protect them, just take a second and understand they're doing it to you too. Hmm. Oh, on the same subjects, right? Like, and then when I finally can talk a person into telling the truth and going, can we have a sit down? I would like to hear everything you're not able to say to me, whether it's a father and a son, you know, the father, son, or father, mother, child, like talk where they tell the truth about everything they've never asked, said, or think, is how you break down all the walls to being true to each other. And everyone thinks that theirs are dirtier than the other, right? It's like everybody is. I have never met anyone that didn't love the moment after. And so fear is this like illusion that all the reasons you're keeping your secrets are required. And you are so wrong, and birds of a feather flock together. So as you think you're so sneaky, yeah. No, you're not. So are they.
This is a good segue into the next question that we received from a listener. It's a bit this connection between being honest to yourself and being authentic. How do you balance being authentic, maybe as a leader in a workplace? So for example, somebody who's a leader who's self-aware, who can talk about their weaknesses, who's receptive for feedback and open for feedback. How do you balance that without disempowering yourself?
Self-deprecation that's honest really, I have never seen it not be good for others or yourself, right? I don't believe that, right? I am a firm believer in telling what doesn't work about you and being honest about it creates space for someone else to admit what doesn't work about them versus a culture where you don't admit things, you say you're sorry, you're going to do better next time, though you've never done better next time, right? Like, so there's a stop lying, start confessing, and figure out how to do workarounds with each other. I have never not seen that clean up a culture or change in a family with, like, right? It's like the amount of people who think their father, sister, brother, husband's wife's friend, right, are alcoholics, but will never say it, and then count how many drinks the person's having, and then hate them and hate themselves. That archetype, like that dynamic, is killing all of us and our relationships. And if you say something that would blow up your relationship or get something to change, like the truth sets you free. I didn't say where it's sending you. But someone has to care more about honesty than they care about manipulation. And hiding information is always a manipulation.
So you mentioned relationships, and it's something that I talk about a lot with people that I work with as a consultant, and a coach right now, is and a communication coach, is the idea of toxic relationships at work. Is the idea that you have you're competent in your role that you were hired for, or that you're having in a company. You are generally someone who's collaborative, who works well with others. But then there's this one or other person with whom it turns out to be super hard to work with, and it becomes not hard, but it becomes toxic. How do you coach a person through a toxic relationship? And maybe there's even a parallel there between the workplace and outside of the workplace.
So toxic relationships become toxic because there are whatever agreements that should be being kept or not being kept. There's some agreement, right? And then there's no formal way to get that resolved, and it keeps on happening, and then it creates a divide. And it creates two separate narratives, like the reason you suck, no, the reason you suck. And because there's no forum to get those two people to admit or own their dark side, right? Oh, yes, I promise that I'll do things to make you happy. You ask me to do 22 things. I can only do 5 a day, and it's your fault. I have to lie to you. Just tell me what you can't do. I never told you to lie, right? So what happens is there's a broken agreement that no one's resolving, and there's no way to talk about how to resolve that. Of course there's a way to talk about how to resolve that. Of course there's a way to untoxify that situation if you have a third party.
Yeah, right? That would have been my next question, because what if you can't reach the person? What if you don't? What if the person's not, the other person is not open to addressing it, to create that forum in which you can address what's broken, the broken contract?
So if you're in, like, if it's someone who has power over you and they're a liar, or there's something they won't address and you can't address it with them, right? then that really is a reason to leave that business unit. Right? You really are in a position, it's time to go. If you can't go to HR, if you can't report on it, if you're like, no, I want this job, I don't want to leave, and I don't want to leave because it's toxic, I need a workaround, Lauren, like, tell me the workaround, right? You always take responsibility for all of it. Oh, you really wanted it on Tuesday. Oh, gosh, what was wrong with me? I thought you said Monday, like Wednesday. Great, I'll go get it for you. Oh, I'm so sorry. You tell the truth and you always take responsibility for getting it wrong, right? So then you're just wonderful and always kind and always eating crow, even though you know better, and you say it so they don't, like, so I need to know more about the two people. So there really is a way to save face, take all the responsibility, and keep the job. You'll feel a lot like a sucker, but really I would tell you to leave.
What is something that you found that younger people earlier in their career worry about too much?
Pleasing their parents.
Talk more about that.
Marrying the right person for your parents, having the right job for your parents, making sure your parents are proud of you. Like, you know, your dad always wanted you to have a secure job, so therefore you studied accounting, right? Like, so, like, people do things to please their parents because their parents did so much for them. And so then they, and really you don't get out of that till your late 20s, early 30s, when you figure out you don't live with your parents anymore. They have their own lives. They have their own issues. As a matter of fact, you don't want to turn into them at all. And you're in the middle of pleasing them and there's no really good reason, right? Like, you don't, your mother doesn't have to sleep with who you sleep with, right? Why are you dating her perfect man?
How do you help people break free from pleasing their parents?
By getting them to dream in all areas of their own life, right? So in the book, or, you know, in the method, most people, if you haven't written all 12 dreams in all 12 different areas, you really haven't. I write my dreams out every year, like, to see what's new, to see, like, so I could be true to that, right? So there really is the right, like, you brush your teeth every day, right? Like, there's exercises that call you forth, right, to be true to yourself. Most people have to start to actually figure out what's being true to themselves, or else you'll be really trying to please someone else or answering to something that you don't even know what you're answering to. So this is how you defect. You start inventing your own design.
What's more important, confidence or courage?
Oh, I love this question. You know why? Because I think confidence, when you ask the difference between confidence and courage, I go, oh, confidence, when you're asking in comparison to courage, confidence is the noun. And if you want to go, how do I grow confidence? I'm like, you have to have courage. So the act of courage is taking lots and lots and lots of actions, like I was a courageous action after another. The more courageous you are, the more confidence you will have. Confidence is a noun.
This is great. How do you practice courage?
So, you know, whatever you're dying for in your life, right? So in the 12 different areas of life, right, there really is, I want 18% body fat. I want to make $250,000 before I'm 30. You know, like, there's milestones in each area, right? And then what are you going to do to get to that, right? So there is never, you can come up with any plan that causes any dream. A plan has to live in actions, people, right? So you want to run a marathon in under 4 hours? That's a lot of practice, right? You want to be able to play 5 songs by the end of the year on your guitar that you really want to learn, right? You're going to have to practice. So it's understanding that a dream gives very specific actions in time. And so that's how you get yourself to reorganize.
So this is a question from a woman. So I'm gonna describe it. I'm gonna read it out as I received it. And the question goes: women can be more subject to competition with others, but also with other women. And there's so few of women in leadership generally. So what would be your advice on how to change, how we can change the dynamic and build more solidarity?
So men are way ahead of us because they've been doing it longer. They've been in business longer. They've been in positions to climb up the ladder longer, right? Like, it's not their fault, right? Right? So now we're all equal and we can break in and we can get there. Okay. In which case, you're going to have to build relationships. You can't have enough relationships, and you can't have enough relationships with women in different industries of different ages. So what I would tell you to do is have a quarterly dinner, a monthly dinner. Everybody pays for themselves, right? But you get like three core people that you love, and everyone has to bring a guest and a new guest once a month. Right. So, and then everyone talks about their issues and how to help each other. That would change your life and the world, and it would grow and grow, and don't ever stop it. And in 20 years, you'll have a network you can't believe you know.
That's great advice. From the same person, follow-up question. How do you, I'm quoting the question, can women lead by fully being themselves? Or is there such a thing as an expected model to be a leader?
It's always like you can follow or you can pioneer. I have been pioneering my whole life. I don't follow. I don't make a good follower. I don't want to be, but I've never had to be because I won't. Right. Notice I run away screaming from companies and until I built my own. So know yourself. Right. And if you would prefer to fit in, to get along, to be liked, right, to aspire to being a leader that you love, but you're not a pioneer, then pick your favorite leaders and really follow them. And listen to their speeches and look at how they dress. Like, there's nothing wrong with copying anything. And there's also nothing wrong with being a renegade, a pioneer who does it herself. Okay? So, you know, which are you? Which one makes you feel sexier, cooler? Not which do you wish you were, but which one are you more? And then do it really well, right? They're parallel lanes. You're one or the other. Pick your lane. Could you end up being someone who follows, kind of takes wisdom, and then eventually pioneers? Absolutely, right? So you can defect at any time when it doesn't feel natural anymore.
So you mentioned an advice to know to know yourself. What is a good exercise to figure that out?
My book.
It's true.
So it is. It's so true. Because there's 12 areas of life. I ask for your dream. I ask you to rate your current life against your dream, and I ask you to explain why you gave that rating and all your beliefs that are between you and being an 8, 9, or 10. That gets you really having to explain everything. So this first assignment that I have people do, I call a life story colonoscopy. Right. So you're forced to get everything out of you and really see all of it. Right. And the second section in the book is all your personality traits that you got from your parents and how you've been reacting to your parents your whole life, positively and negatively, and they're reacting to their marriage. So the very exercise I give is all for the quickest road to self-awareness.
It is uncomfortable to go through the exercises. I struggle, like, you really have to be honest with yourself, and it can be really discomforting. Yes. But it's good. It's a great, it has a bit of a therapeutic, a therapeutic, self-therapeutic thing.
By the way, it will rewire, like, just by, you know, when you ask a question, you lead the witness, right? Right. So the entire book is asking you questions that's leading you to a type of awareness that even if you did nothing but the assignment, it would rewire your relationship to yourself, which, you know, is what my intention is that your whole life gets rewired toward your dreams.
The advice that we typically receive is that we have to put ourselves out there and outside of our comfort zone in order to grow. How do you know when the being outside of your comfort zone becomes so discomforting that it becomes damaging?
I would never stay in anything I wasn't really thinking was working or making me feel better. Or even if it was painful, I thought I earned it, deserved it, and it was good for me, like cathartic. So don't do anything or stay anywhere if you're really in pain day after day. Whatever it is, even if you think you should be able to take it, if it's not making you feel better or happier, it's not working. Abort the mission and go, I'll reboot later, right? There's no need to really extra suffer ever.
Yeah, that's great advice. What advice do you have for people who have reached their goals? Like what do you do next?
Well, your greatest enemy is boredom, which is accomplishing a lot, right? It's like, you know, and you always should know when your dreams are coming close to expiring, and dreams expire, right? So getting, you know, a lot of people don't appreciate that, you know, kind of getting through their honeymoon, like that there was a time frame between when you started dating the love of your life to the end of the honeymoon, and that something expires in that moment, and people don't understand that things keep expiring, right? Oh, now you have two kids and a house. That expires. What's next? Like, how do you keep love alive? How do you keep your career alive? How do you keep your body being sexy alive to you? Like, so things keep expiring, and you better know when you get bored or you start gaining weight or you stop sleeping with your wife or you stop, like, expiration dates, things start rotting. And you're in charge of not letting anything rot by upping the ante every time.
What advice do you have for people who lead more experienced or older people in age, employees who are older in age?
Expiration dates, right? It goes right with what I just said, which is you are never too old to reinvent yourself or to have a dream or to fulfill on it. Like, screw you. I don't care how old you are. You get to have a great sex life with, I don't care how long you've been married. I don't care. Like, I don't care. You've never done that with your son before. You can have those conversations, right? So there's a stubbornness to stay the same that happens when you get older. And I want to smack that out of you.
Mm-hmm. So to build on that, like if I would be managing people in an organization who are more experienced than I am in their as subject matter experts, but I'm leading the team, or these are people who are older than me in age, like how can I be an effective leader to them for people who are more experienced?
Build a deep relationship with them. Let them have their areas of wisdom, you know, offline. So they feel respected, understood, and appreciated, even though you're 30 and they're 48 and you're their boss, right? So if they feel respected, heard, and understood for where they've been and used for that, they can love you for why you were picked to run that team.
Yeah, it's a great advice. You mentioned relationships throughout our conversation. How do you build, how do you develop healthy relationships?
The most important ingredient for love, like the verb of love, is caring, asking, like intimately hearing every, like how you know I love my husband is I want to hear about his day every day. How you know I love my kid, like what happened, what do you need, tell me all about it, what was funny, what, like share. So hearing everything and knowing more than less is an act of love and an act of appreciation and listening, right? And there's no better way to build relationships. And if you don't actually care, like, I don't care what he did today. I don't really want to know what's interesting to him, right? That will not ever become a good relationship, right? If you don't want to listen and hear, you're in a lot of trouble.
What's the most important skill that a coach should master?
Not being intimidated by blurting out the truth. You're fat, right? Like, you don't look happy. I don't believe you, right? Like, not appeasing the client, right? People appease and they aren't willing to get fired. I am happy to get fired. Like, I literally start a new client going, okay, so I have a list of all the things that I think you need to work on. And I'm going to say it as brutally as possible so that you can decide if you agree or disagree with what I'm saying. And you don't ever have to work with me again. But if you want to work with me, this is what I think clearly. Okay. Wow, I am blown away. You are a remarkable liar, right? You impress me, right? Like, you don't tell the truth anywhere. Look, I looked at your relationship, right? So I can be brutal, funny, and loving, but so up at your nose, you can't, like, and if a coach can't come toe-to-toe with you, then they really are a therapist. Like want to listen, want to get you there and lead the witness. Like, there's much more romantic ways versus I'm going to tell you to go back again and shoot that basket. That sucked.
We're moving into the final segment. Those are the last five questions that I have for you today. And then I'm going to have to let you go. And these are questions that we typically ask all our guests on the podcast, but also in the events that we host here in Berlin. So the first one of those five is, if you could leave people with a piece of advice that they can put into immediate action right now after listening to you, what would you tell them?
There's one promise if you kept it for the next 6 weeks, like four times a week, do X. Like, there's one promise for 6 weeks that you know exactly what it is. Do it, tell someone else about it, and put $100 on it if you don't keep it every day or four times a week or whatever it is. Like, do it and put a consequence on it with someone who will collect.
Yeah, who gets the money?
Yes.
Needs to be set, yeah. What are the top three foundational skills that you would recommend people earlier in their career to start crafting that are portable, the skills that are portable throughout life and career?
Schmooze, like being able to be totally talented at caring, making conversation, walking up to anyone, anywhere, bus stop, and just going, how's your day going? Right? And like connect intimately and give love and feel like that ability is the most important thing you've got. And then paying it forward, right? Doing something for someone, right? Will never go badly in the end. Like the karmic pay it forward concept, like pay karma forward, do one thing nice for someone every day that is out of your way, builds a lifetime of good fortune. Do I have, what did you say? Four, three of them?
Three. Those were two, I think.
Two. So schmooze, pay it forward. And what other skill would I say? Listen, right? So, and be able to listen to something you don't want to hear, right? So for me, it would be listening to why someone loves Donald Trump. And not listen so I could kill him, hate him, prove my point of view, but listen so I actually could understand someone else's reality.
How do you do that effectively? Sorry if I interrupt.
One, you ask them, okay, so tell me what you love about him. Tell me why. Tell me what you think he's doing. Tell me everything. And you're like a journalist. Right? You're just getting the information. You want to get it right. You want to get the facts right. And then you give it back to them. So you love his haircut, right? You like that color of his skin. Wow. You think he doesn't do government the way government's been done all these years. Like, you give back what they said in your own language so that you can step in, like an actor can step into any character. You can step into anyone's experience and emulate it, understand it, and even possess it.
Can I follow up on the first one where on schmooze? What if you come across as very outgoing and open and extrovert? What do you tell people who identify more as introverts? Who cringe at the thought of walking up to somebody at a bus stop and initiating a conversation? What do you tell people to be good at schmoozing when you're terrified of the idea of schmoozing?
Okay, the reason you're terrified is because you don't do it. Like, could you go back to a time in my life where I was scared on the school bus? I was scared at a new camp. I had no friends. Right. Can everybody go back to having to learn that skill? Are some people better than others? Yes. Is it more natural? Yes. Okay. But I have the perfect foil, like, will ruin you immediately if you follow this instruction. Ready? It's awful and it will work. Go sign up for an improv class. If you're really an introvert, I just said two classes. Do beginner and advanced. If you need to do beginner and then advanced, do that. You will never be the same again, and you will get over all your issues about being an introvert. An introvert can be rewired with improv.
Schmooze, paid forward, and listen. It's great.
Yes.
What is an item on your bucket list?
I want to go on a very long... So my husband rides BMW motorcycles, right? Old BMW motorcycles. And I love being on the back of an old BMW motorcycle. And then I want to go around the world to different countries. And so the one that's like yelling at me to go visit is New Zealand. So New Zealand on the back of my husband's motorcycle, half camping, half fancy, roaming around beautiful countryside.
Beautiful.
Bucket list.
This is the Role Models Podcast. Do you have role models yourself?
Sure. Like, who's a role model of mine? Gosh, you know, it's so cute. Really, the highest level of my greatest role model is how much John Lennon got done with the song Imagine. Like, one man, one song could change the world. And he did it before he was like died at 40, right? Like, it has nothing to do with time or how long you've been here. So it just moves me that human potential is capable of that much majesty. And then I use that song and that man to represent all of us.
This is the last question. We asked all our guests that question last. What is the one piece of advice that you would give your 14-year-old self?
Be nicer to your parents. They didn't need it. They didn't deserve it. it didn't, it just made you all suffer more. You shit. Right? Like, you were difficult. You were rude and you were meaner than you ever had to be. So then it took me a lot longer to clean up my past and my relationship with my parents so that I respected myself with them. And they were never changing the ways they were never changing. Like, I didn't have to hate them. I didn't have to be righteous. I didn't have to be such a bitch. Right? And so that's what I would have whispered very loudly.
That's a beautiful thing to end on. Lauren, you've been very generous with your time. Thank you so much for coming on our podcast. I think there's a bunch of really good nuggets of wisdom here. Thank you so much for your time. And maybe we can do a round two when your new book is out.
That sounds absolutely perfect.
And in the meantime, we recommend reading the book. It's called Maybe It's You, Cut the Crap, Face the Fears, Love Your Life. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. This is great.
Thanks again to Lauren for sharing her story. If you want to support this podcast, you can do this by going to iTunes, subscribe to this podcast for free. You can post a short review and use the star rating. This helps us reach more listeners like yourself and rise through the charts on iTunes. If you want to make a contribution to make the creation of this podcast possible, you can do that by going to patreon.com/RoleModels. Thank you for listening. Until next time.